Continue briefly our discussion last week with somebody was telling us that they felt they had an advantage in working in Europe because their location gave them an advantage to the east. And I think I mentioned it to you after the net. I thought about that and realized, wait a minute, radio signals, probably all electromagnetic waves for that matter, follow the curvature of the Earth. Ground wave, sky wave, even line of sight to a certain extent, though you probably don't notice it over a short distance, signals above VHF, which are only a line of sight. So if your antenna favors due east, you're probably actually favoring South Africa and maybe Southern Europe. So typically, especially if the antenna's not a beam, even amateur beam widths at HF are quite wide. You're not talking about anywhere near a tight beam. So that was the main comment I wanted to make. Go ahead.
Okay. That propagation is an interesting topic, and way back when people were utilizing it at first, they had no clue. We talked in the past about, the first layer discovered was the D. There's no A, there's no B, there's no C. There's D, there's E, and finally F, and then they split the F1 and F2. The ARRL has a book on propagation. I don't think I've had a chance to read it yet. I think it's sitting in my stack of to-be-read things. So I look forward to that. But it's a curious phenomena.
Yeah. Something you're interested in, you might look up Dr. Tamitha Scott's channel on YouTube. I think she mainly does the channel to promote her graduate program in solar physics, but still, she does radio propagation reports every week. Not exclusively focused on amateur radio needs, focused on the aerospace industry and others, but she did recently get an amateur license and is beginning to focus on that a little more. And she mentioned something very interesting that happened last week. Those of us who watch the DX spots or the radio maps, as some people call them, of global propagation, there was like a total blank in the Pacific for one or two evenings, evening our time, daytime their time. Apparently there was a solar storm which totally blacked out the produced a radio blackout on the daylight side of the Earth. Kind of eerie to look at, I was wondering what was going on because I looked at the spots to see what I could work. It's sort of total blank in the Pacific. And I'm like, okay, is there a new war? I realized quickly enough there wasn't, and it was kind of interesting that Dr. Scott confirmed it in her review of solar weather yesterday. A lot of interesting stuff going on. I had been wondering, though, that at this point in the sunspot cycle, it seemed weird that last week I worked my best DX on 80 meters and not on the high band. Anyway, enough of a monologue. Go ahead.
Yeah, isn't she the lady who used to do propagation reports of solar activity on Ham Nation? I think she's been around for at least 6 years or so. It sounds very familiar, and she also finally got her amateur radio license about 3-4 years ago. And she was primarily she's a solar kind of a physics weather conditions on the sun type of thing. The sun has been very wonky lately. I've mentioned before late spring and summer. 10 meters was dead. For no apparent reason, you would look at the sunspot activity, and it was active but if you tuned into 10 meters, it was dead as a doornail. I was lucky if I was talking to people in New Jersey. There was no propagation. And the premise, finally, among the guys who know or think they know or hope they know, was that there were these disruptive bursts that went along with the usual solar flares of sunspot activity, and they were disrupting the whole F1, F2 layer. So I guess it's more of the same. It's kind of interesting. Sometimes when I listen to reports, they were kind of a little dated by the time it was, because I think they were pre-recorded, so a lot of times they were from the previous week, and, solar reports from the previous week are like weather reports from the previous week. So, I kind of got out of the habit of watching Ham Nation and those reports. I should check it on YouTube. Maybe they're fresher there.
Jason, you're going to comment on recent transmission on this computer. Please comment.
Once again, you're not licensed. You really can't do this on the repeater. If you want to contact me, you can contact me through my email. Don't need a license for email. As I mentioned before, I will listen to the recording. I cannot listen to the recording while I do the technical net. So when I get a chance, I will listen to the recording. So
please, I apologize, Roy. I just want to listen to his comments. He mentioned it earlier. I apologize.
Okay. Anyway, back to you, Frank.
Yeah, really good. I did actually have a couple of comments on the issue of 10 meter cross links and who can operate, etc. I don't know if you want to get back into that issue. Go ahead.
Sure. That's a kind of interesting topic. It's probably more of an FCC legal type of a, but I'm interested in what you have to say.
Yeah, very good. I believe I remember correctly. I haven't looked at the regs on this in a very long time. But I believe the interpretation is correct that the FCC decided when the issue first came up is that as long as the techs are licensed on the band they're transmitting on, they are allowed to go out. And I'm guessing that one of the reasons they're being kind of liberal on that is to encourage amateur operation and to allow techs to go through amateur satellites that go in on 2 meters and out on 10 meters. I'm not sure if that's the reason. It sounds logical that that may be one of the reasons for that interpretation of the regs, because these satellite downlinks on 10 meters, I'm 100% sure there are any, but when there were, those were not in the tech band. So I think that may have been one of the motivations for coming up with a kind of liberal ruling on that. If somebody here is active on satellites and knows the regs better, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. I know in IRB, Internet Remote Base Operation, I've been told that when I operate, and I've seen this from a number of IRB owners, not just the one I use, that when I operate through an internet remote, I am the control operator and I am fully responsible, not the remote. So I can only be on frequencies that I'm allowed to operate on. I have an amateur extra, so that doesn't pose a problem to me. The other wonky interpretation that I sometimes have discussions with people on field day about is that some people are... And this one, somebody did look it up and tell me I was right. When I was operating a K3FI on field day, the local radio club's call sign, somebody said, well, wait a minute, Frank, you're in the extra band. We're not an extra class station. I said, well, I'm an extra class licensee. I could go wherever I want. It's licensed to amateurs. The club call takes on the license class of the operator. somebody looked it up on the phone and said, okay, Frank, you're right.
Okay, nowadays we need lawyers to operate on the radio. I wonder if there's ways of playing around with that little loophole. If you could jury rig something where a person with an extra license can set up on his own station a link between a local VHF or UHF repeater and another radio at a shack that's tuned to any other ham band not on the tech privileges. And because they established that link, although the original person is sitting there with a Baofeng talking on 2 meters or 70 centimeters, he can have a conversation with someone on 80 or 40 or 20 without needing to go third party with the guy who set it all up's license instead of their own. So that would be curious. Again, another need for a person with a law degree and a thorough understanding of Rule 97.
Right. I have a question for you. How can someone come onto this computer and incite violence on innocent people and promote racial hatred towards others? How is that legally defensible under SEC rules? Just a question.
Once again, I'm trying to be nice. Some people are going to tell me I'm trying to be too nice. You don't have a license. You can't talk on the radio. You want to ask me all kinds of questions, email me. You're free to email me. I gave my email address before. If you want, I'll give my email address again. You can't come on a radio without a license. It's as simple as that. So, again, please.
It sounds right, but there are people that are promoting racial violence on this computer. You understand? And so, how is it that they're allowed to do that?
I'll listen to the tapes. I don't run the club. I don't run the repeater. I'm just the guy who does a net once a week. So you got to understand where I'm coming from. And again, I'm sure there are people out there saying, don't respond to this guy. He's not a licensed operator. Don't respond. So please, give me that respect. I gave you my word that I'll listen to it. I will listen to it, but you can't talk on the radio. Get a license, you can talk on the radio. Without a license, you can't.
I won't say anything else.
Okay, fine. Frank, back to you.
Yeah, with the caveat that I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on the internet or the repeater, my interpretation of the scenario you're talking about is that the person would have to operate under the control operator's third party. I'm phrasing that wrong. Under the control operator license using their call sign, and effectively be a third party. And you know, that's fine for domestic contacts, which is all a lot of people are interested in. That could be problematic as a third party for DX contacts. That would be my interpretation. That's just based on about 52 years of being a ham. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Okay, I mean, it's very possible. I would tend to think that it's... it kind of goes against the concept of how the repeater, 10-meter repeater would work, because under those similar guidelines, you would operate as third party with the repeater owner's call sign, not your own. But again, it seems a bit like a kludge. I'll agree with you that it's probably the kludge that was selected, but it's a kludge nevertheless. Yeah, someone said comment, but they said it at about, 20 decibels below everyone else's amplitude. So yell into the microphone and make your comment. Okay, your amplitude's really low. I had to kind of rev up the gain on my headphones. Theoretically, you're talking about third-party control. And that goes also theoretically for repeaters. I think if you talk to some FCC lawyer about repeaters, their assumption is that there is a control operator 24/7 that can shut down the repeater. Because I think they would frown upon a situation where the control operator, goes to work, goes to sleep, and he listens to his own repeater 3-4 hours a day. That means that someone could basically take it over and do all kinds of mayhem for 12 hours before anyone figures out to contact the guy with the keys to shut it down. So I agree with you that that theoretically that's the basis for third-party control. But, in situations where repeaters are involved, I tend to not believe that people put in that much vigilance.
That's all right.
Yeah, boy, back when I started as a old timer now, at one time the FCC did require that repeaters be constantly monitored, and they were eventually convinced, well, that wasn't entirely practical, so it was okay for a control station to record 24 hours a day, and I think that wasn't very practical, and eventually they just dropped that. And yeah, they have made some weird exceptions, like there are also some exceptions for digital communications, packet where originally they said, well, you couldn't relay email via packet unless the control operator looked at every message first, and eventually they were convinced that wasn't practical. So there are all kinds of crazy exceptions to the normal control operator rules, apparently. As you say, it's not simple. This has been case for a long time. I remember in the 70s, a certain repeater in Manhattan, the control operators insisted that the only regulations they were allowed to follow were the regulations that were in force when the repeater was created, was first put on the air in the 1960s, and there was no way to convince them that you followed the regulations as they changed with the times. Go ahead.
What about when someone on this repeater is inciting violence to kill other people?
AC2GS, Frank. Well, that almost sounds like those Dominionists and the QAnonists, where they talk about pre-Civil War laws, and they only seem to believe in those. Anything written after the Civil War is null and void and such. So, everyone has an opportunity to be a little weird and a little strange. What can I tell you? I remember there was a time on a repeater where, for whatever reason, two people were having a conversation in a foreign language. And someone in charge of the repeater got on and told them immediately not to speak in a foreign language because they were operating as the net control operator for the repeater, and they needed to understand what they were talking about, and he didn't have a clue what they were talking about. So there's a language problem as well. I don't think the people would kind of give people a hard time, though, if it was two guys talking in Spanish on a New York City repeater, but I could be wrong.
Well, what I would say is if they're speaking English and they're inciting violence against other people, against other races, I would think that that is not cool. What do you think, Roy?
I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to just make believe you're not transmitting because you're not supposed to transmit. So from now on, you're inaudible. I'm sorry. Anyway, Frank, Any other comment on this subject? I still have three more people on the list tonight. You know, when it rains, it pours.
No, it is time to move on. But thank you for indulging me, and hopefully it's been useful for some people. WB2BXL.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Frank, as always, for your participation on the Technical Net. I really appreciate it. Charlie, you're up next. What's your question for tonight, Charlie?
My question is, with AI, where are they going with this?
Well, it depends who you talk to. Some people are just in it to make trillions of dollars. The guy who is the present president of OpenAI has mentioned that he would like companies all over the world to invest over $1 trillion into chips that speed up the process of generative artificial intelligence. So he's looking for trillions of dollars. His company has been valued at something like $20 billion at this point, and it started as a kind of nonprofit organization, which it definitely isn't anymore. So some people are looking for money. Other people are looking to fire everyone that they pay to do a job and replace it with a server, a rack, and other people are just scared, and other people are just gleeful. It's a different thing. Theoretically, if you have a truly artificial intelligence with high cognitive abilities, it's basically a free genius. You can have it do anything you want. You can have it practice medicine. You can have it practice law. You can have it do legislatures. You can fire all your executives who are overpaid and replace them with artificial intelligence. You don't need to hire an artist. You tell artificial intelligence to draw you a picture, and you got a picture. You don't need an author. You ask artificial intelligence to write a story. It writes a story. So, I mean, the end result is everyone being unemployed. Now, how society deals with everyone being unemployed, other than them starving to death, and before they die, they kill the people who gave us artificial intelligence, I don't know. Yes, Wesley?
I'm going to quote the text. The model estimates 10% chance of transformative AI, defined as AI that, if deployed widely, would precipitate a change comparable to the Industrial Revolution being developed by 2025, and 50% chance of being developed by 2033. But the real question is outsmarting the humans. It's not really about outsmarting the humans, but at which point it will start to act by itself. Back to you.
Okay, I mean, that wasn't exactly, I think, Charlie's question. We can kind of get into the weeds of that when you're up to bat. That's a slightly different thing. So I'd rather not veer into that early. So we'll get back to it, Wesley. Charlie, are you okay with my answer, or you need any other aspect discussed?
No, I believe your aspect is right, because I'm out of work today. I want to go back to work, okay? And I can't, because AI took my job.
Can I ask what kind of job it was?
I was a butcher.
You were a butcher? AI took a butcher's job?
Yes. The wholesale industry, there's nobody left in it. It's all done by computer, all done by AI and laser.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, well, that's kind of fascinating. It was my understanding that arbitrage, butchery, and usually that was the problem with low-paying immigrants. You know, when COVID struck, and they passed some executive orders to stop closing these slaughterhouses because they were unsafe for workers, that there were a lot of underpaid immigrant and child laborers doing all that stuff. So I didn't know that butchery had become such a 21st century laser operated technology. That's odd.
Butchery has always been done by illegal immigrants, as the Führer would like to say.
That's very right.
Well, I've known butchers. I mean, my uncle was a fishmonger. There are, guys who have made livings doing it. So I'm terribly happy to hear this, Charlie, that the artificial intelligence is... Well, the difference between, as Wesley mentioned, the industrial age and such, didn't kind of destroy the possibility of human beings having jobs. It shifted the jobs that were necessary, operating the machinery, fixing the machinery. The service industries took off. Artificial intelligence kind of adds a new unfortunate wrinkle in that its ultimate goal would be to replace everyone. There's very few people that, manual labor can be done with mechanical devices or robot-like devices. Wired into artificial intelligence probably makes them much more productive. And service industry, that could all be mechanized and artificial intelligence and all the other. I can't think of any particular business or employment where a sophisticated artificial intelligence that doesn't exist yet, thankfully, can't reproduce and do it cheaply. So, it depends upon how the technology is gotten to, whether it's cheaply or expensively. But it's very worrisome. You kind of would like to have a population of employed people making money, spending money, making the wheel go round. And your two choices in failure to do that is to either subsidize everyone, which has been proposed in the past, that there's a minimum income type of rule. So if you don't have a job, you can't get a job, and you have X number of dollars a week, a year. The only other thing is to let everyone fail, and then you'll have just a revolution, because people will not quietly into this good night. So it concerns me a lot. I don't think it's going to get that bad in my lifetime, but the future kind of is an unwritten thing, and I worry for future generations. Just because you can do a thing does not necessarily mean that you should do that thing, and people can get that terribly wrong.
If I may, Roy, what he's talking about is butchery or mass slaughter of animals in the west and south of region, Texas, those regions. And so, maybe you might not know that, but illegal immigrants were used to butcher animals and to provide labor that American-born people were not, they did not want to do, and because they did not have health insurance, and many of them would sustain injuries, the dangerous nature of the work. And so what the gentleman is saying about AI is AI would perform these tasks that humans would do, but that we have not come to that yet. But I feel that in the future, yes, that would be something that robots would be able to do.
Yes, that's something they can do now. If you try going into a store and ask the butcher to cut something, he can't.
Comment?
Who's asking to comment?
As N2U.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment talking about AI taking away jobs, which I agree, you know, it is an issue. I worked as a projectionist before I retired. The technology is what's taking away the jobs in a lot of fields. The movie theaters now can operate with virtually nothing more than a box office and a candy person.
Well, yeah, I mean, technology has always ruined people's lives in many ways. Nowadays, in the last few centuries, people have had to grow very flexible. It wasn't like the old days where you learned a craft and that craft was good for 10 generations. If you learn a craft, if you're lucky, it lasts as long as your lifetime. My father, may rest in peace, was a printer, and I think it was offset was his specialty. He learned it back in the 30s, I think, and in the 60s and the 70s, I think offset just kind of died, and they shifted to a different type of technology, and he was stuck. He had to either learn a new different way of dealing with things or find some other job. And he was never particularly thrilled and happy with that technological change. But technologies change, and sometimes technologies become cheaper, more efficient, and not requiring human beings. So that's a steady progress that has done this to us for centuries. You know, Luddites with their dubious throwing shoes into the machinery to break them. Is not going to slow down technology, but you know, artificial intelligence strikes me as the ultimate destroyer of jobs, because now it doesn't really give you an opportunity to shift to a different aspect, a different job that you can make a living in, even though it's not identical to what you used to do. Nowadays, you know, every place that you turn is a possible thing to be replaced by a server racket. And when that happens and there's no other alternative jobs, there's no service industry if no one needs someone to service anything. So I don't know. It's a problem that has no solution now. There are people crying that the sky is falling and others saying that everything is peachy keen and the golden age is about to descend upon us. I don't know. It concerns me a great deal, but I don't think we're going to solve it tonight, guys.
Comments in 1YDY.
Thank you very much.
W2LVQ comment also.
Okay. Hank, you wanted to say something?
Just wanted to relate a quick story about artificial intelligence kind of muck, if I may.
Certainly.
So Air Canada just lost a lawsuit where an individual got on the internet and booked a flight, and he wanted to get a bereavement flight. And the chatbot that Air Canada was so gung-ho about using and had an AI function gave the guy instructions on how to do something to get a bereavement fare. When he followed the instructions, it was against the written Air Canada policy, and Air Canada denied it. So they went to court, and Air Canada argued that the chatbot was its own person with its own agency and therefore was the entity that should be on trial, not the airline itself. And since it had no money, it couldn't be sued. So I just thought it got a kick out of that.
Okay, yes, I heard about that. And the way the court ruled was against the airplane company. So they disagreed. You provide this chatbot, you're responsible for what the damn thing says. So actually, that guy won his case. He was very smart to copy the screen for posterity's sake and then take him into small claims court.
Yep, you're right. But the interesting thing to me was that Air Canada had so embraced AI because they were hoping to replace a number of employees with it and now have removed it from the from their screens at the time. You don't even see the chatbot.
Well, I mean, this has happened repeatedly. I'm sure you've read artificial intelligence has gone really far lengths lately. When OpenAI presented GPT, it kind of changed everything. Up until then, the chatbots, the bad artificial intelligence would be easily corrupted by people playing with it. And inevitably, I think Microsoft brought out, long before ChatGPT, an artificial AI robot that became a racist, horrible pseudo-human being. And they've done that repeatedly. So, you know, Canadair Air isn't the first, won't be the last. Everyone's trying to cut corners. Everyone's trying to make more profit for the company so that the shares will go up and their ability to invest profits will go up with it. And so I don't see these people stopping what they do. You know, they overreach, they burn their fingers, they pull back for a week or a month, and then they go back to it. So this is not the last you will hear of terrible AI stories. The next few years will be scattered with horrendous tales of AIs gone horribly wrong. Not quite Terminator wrong, but you know, like I mentioned earlier tonight, where you annoyed a whole bunch of people by demonstrating that the Third Reich soldiers were Asian women and black men. So, I don't know.
Comment, BHD.
Comment, yes, LVQ. Let me get one whitey white clear. Thank you.
Okay, VLQ first, because he threw his call sign out earlier, and then we'll get to you, Jim.
All right, thanks. It's W2LVQ. I just want to say that the thing with the meatpacking industry is real, and the real issue is the almighty dollar. They want to make more money, just like you said, but they're not they're devious about it. What they're trying to use as a reason for getting the people off the line was one of the things they were using was COVID, that they didn't want the meat to get contaminated with COVID. So this is the reason why AI is going to save us. So it's really, really, once again, we're being manipulated like we've always been manipulated, and it leads to people losing their jobs, and who knows what's going to happen. But anyway, that's my comment. Back to Ned.
Drugs are being given to the illegals, quote-unquote, and they're illegal because it's convenient for our country to use them to maximize profits. That's okay.
Look, there's a lot of grifters, and they will grift. They will use all kinds of excuses, and that's the underbelly, the underside of human nature. There are saints out there, and there are a bit of devils, and they're looking out for their profits. They're looking to, because nowadays, you know, in the old days when tax percentages were very high, you know, if you made above a certain amount, 90% of any more would go to the tax, the IRS. So it didn't really pay to kind of make a lot of money. So there were limitations, and so people plowed money back into the business and into the people working for them and all kinds of things. But nowadays, the lid is off, and you could pump up the stock, get stock options, so there's a lot of motivation to increase the value of stocks. Recently, I'm sure you all heard that in great desperation there were gangs of people basically robbing from retail outlets all over the place. They would come in, some organization, and just empty everything out. And, you know, crime was rife. And because of that, the major chains were going to close down stores because they were losing money right and left. And then someone investigated it, and they came back and they said, oops, really the retail crime isn't a big problem. We just wanted to consolidate our profits. We had expanded too wide, and we weren't making as much money as we wanted, and we figured out that if we inconvenience people by having to travel a few more miles, we make a lot more money. So we're making a lot more money. Have a nice day. So, you know, I mean, this is business. This is capitalism. This is the dark side. This is the underbelly. There are good things. There are bad things. Again, human beings. I've said it before. All these things kind of are like tools. You can use them for good things or bad. I can give a person a hammer, they could build a house, or they could bash in the skull of their neighbor. It depends on how you use a tool. So how will we use the tool of artificial intelligence? Probably not well. That would be my guess, judging from previous examples of mankind. But you can't put the genie back in the bottle. So we're going to have to play this one and see how it ends.
One question, Roy. What if people come in here, quote-unquote, illegally, and they work in these meat factories and they work in jobs that Americans don't want to work because I get it. You know, we deserve better, I guess. And then you deny them the ability to...
Anyway, Charlie, any other comments?
No, thank you. You answered all my questions.
Sorry, Roy. I'm just putting that up.
Okay, on to our next person on our list, Ed, N2TUU.
Yeah, N2TUU here. Yeah, I got a little different topic. Hopefully this will be a little lighter tonight. I'm kind of new to DMR, and I was using the digital monitor on my Anytone radio, and I noticed I don't hear all the stuff on the frequency. Some stuff I hear and some stuff I don't. I'm wondering if I'm either setting it up wrong or if that's perfectly normal.
Okay, it's been a while since I kind of played with my Anytone. There's something that used to be, I love the term for it, it was called promiscuous mode. Promiscuous mode is a setting on DMR that you don't need to list the contact people that the squelch will break for. So if you haven't set yours for promiscuous mode, there might be some designations of stations that don't get through. So you might want to kind of thumb through the manual and see if there is such a thing as promiscuous mode, or they call it other things, but I just love the term so much that it kind of locked into my brain.
Yeah, I've gone through that. What they seem to have in there, the manual is really pretty bad. You really got to go on the web to get any information. They call it digital monitor. You turn that on, and then there's a couple of settings where, I think it does both time slots, and it does all groups and whatever they are, all color codes. And I got all those set up. So I was kind of wondering from someone that maybe has got more experience with it if it's perfect. Because I have heard from other people that they say you don't hear everything when you listen to DMR, even though you do monitor the channel. You know, it's not like an analog where, you know, you take the squelch off and you hear everything. So that's basically what my question was.
Okay, I wish I had better information for you. Yeah, I'm aware it has, in the old days, before they came up with promiscuous, you had to program it with what stations you were prepared to listen to, and if it wasn't on your white list, it wasn't passed through. These days, I use a lot of hotspots, and thankfully, that tends to not be a factor with gateways and such. But also, in addition to that, unfortunately, there are setups I've noticed for years now where they use multiple gateways to access larger groups of people. So in other words, they don't just have a Brandmeister. They have something for the other D-Star. They have a gateway, a D-Star gateway that's hooked up to a DMR gateway that's hooked up to a Fusion gateway, and occasionally the gateways become one-way mode, and so you can get things in one direction and you can't get it in the opposite direction. So you can sometimes listen to a net where you're only hearing half of the conversation because one person is talking through one gateway and the other one's talking through another gateway, and it's not kind of being properly shared. So it theoretically could be a case of that as well.
Yeah, I think you may have hit it on the nose there. That's, 'cause I have heard that. I've heard cases where I hear one end of the conversation, then the other hand I don't pick up. So that could be real well. And plus, I think one person said to me that, you know, some of it may also be non-voice data, such as like GPS and things of that nature.
Yeah, it's possible. You can encode all kinds of things, and so they may not be a voice mode channel. But I find that the most annoying when that happens. Usually it's not meant to be like that. It's a defect because it's a black art to program a local server to act as a repeater gateway from one backbone for digital radio to another backbone. I found a guy down in, I think it was South Carolina, who was a whiz at it. He was, he's a Linux master. But it's very difficult, and, I asked him if there's any kind of instructions on the Internet, and he said, no, you basically have to figure it out by yourself for some strange reason. So it's a black art. And so it's very easy, apparently, to corrupt these gateways in this manner. You just have to regularly reboot them, apparently.
All right. Well, thanks very much. Sounds like basically I've got the thing set up right. It's just, like you said, it's configurations, and I don't know, this DMR, this digital stuff has gotten so hairy. You know, I'm a senior. I got my license years ago, and, I'm from the analog era. So back to Ned. Thank you for the comment.
You're welcome, Ed. Yeah, I mean, even the nomenclature is not really friendly. The DMR started as Motorola's commercial method of communicating. And so all the terms are not quite ham-friendly. They don't let you enter your call sign. You have to get a unique identifier from a third party and encode your radio to detect it and translate it to tell you what the call sign for the other guy is. And it's just a mess. And, for years people were frantic about code plugs for DMR radios, whereas, you pick up an FM radio and it's not that difficult to be able to program a couple of repeaters in. But God forgive, if you want to do something digital, you need software, and you need to learn a whole new language. So I wish you good luck with it. It's not that bad. It's not that great. I'm kind of in the middle. I know people who love digital voice modes. I like analog, but I like computers, so, go figure. Okie doke, Wes, take it away. What's your topics for tonight? I know one of them is AI. I don't know if we're going to have self-aware AI. I guess eventually we probably will. But then how do you know if it's self-aware? Because you can program it to already say it's self-aware. That doesn't mean it's self-aware.
Okay, I assume the microphone is to me. Okay, AI. So I give you the praise, the quote. So, Industrial Revolution developed by 2025. That is about 10% of chance and 50% of chance developed by 2033. And question is outsmarting humans or acting by itself. What's your comment on this?
Well, Wes, I thought I commented. I don't believe in these magic numbers. Some guy with a Ouija board came up with these numbers. They're not reproducible. They're not based on anything other than people's gut feelings. There's no scientific underlying basis for any of it. And I don't know what to tell you. Self-awareness is a very difficult concept. How do I know that you're self-aware? If I ask you, you tell me that you're self-aware. I don't know. I think I know I'm self-aware, but what do I know? There are guys out there who think that all of this is just an alien computer running a sophisticated program to simulate a universe. You know, they could be right. I have no way of telling, ultimately. So, you know, that's where philosophers come to make a profit. They write a book on the subject, sell a couple, make some money, and move on to another topic. But I don't know.
Okay, so it means that the chances of intelligent reaction for AI are small. And the question would be, if I don't know how you're going to react and you are the computer, I may think that you are acting by yourself. But actually you are being driven by the algorithm that I have no idea that it exists. But do you believe Skynet will come to be? That is the question.
Well, I mean, that's the whole point of things like generative artificial intelligence. People are not programming directly the algorithms. They are exposing the algorithm to different objects to recognize, and then it's self-correcting, and it adjusts its own internal settings accordingly. Sometimes it makes sense to people, sometimes it doesn't make sense. It's not an external phenomenon. It doesn't demonstrate where and how the knobs are being adjusted. It just adjusts the knobs. And if you give it bad data, it will make inferences that are incorrect. If all of your pictures with a horse also have a donut in them, then after a while, if you show it just a donut, it'll say it's a horse. And there's no way of knowing that unless you just keep an eye open for what you're doing and what you're getting. It's a black box. So all of these generative AIs are black boxes. You cannot go internally and just turn up a value or turn down a value. You basically have to either put a lock on inputs or change the database to something else to change its nature. You know, that's just the way generative AI works. Whether other forms of artificial intelligence will be developed that work differently, I don't know, probably. But they're probably all going to be sort of black boxes because the nature of complication, sophistication for things gets too complicated for one human being to hold on to. You know, building a central processing unit requires computers with central processing units these days. Human beings just couldn't do it in a lifetime anymore. It's gotten too complicated for that.
Okay. Because we have not much time left, I'm going to go to the next one. Thank you very much for that. Rumors. U.S. House of Representatives Intelligence Commissioner Mike Turner calls for the Biden administration to declassify information on what he called a serious national security threat, and that is in regards to deployment of nuclear anti-satellite weapons in space by Kremlin. I've read also the article by Dr. Belden Baldwin, associate professor of University of Leicester, but it might, if it's done, put a threat on all satellites. I'm not sure about the blast that could cause damage to all of the satellites because that distance, again, in regards to inverse square law, is too great. So I don't believe that kind of effect could be possible, but I would like to listen to your comment on it.
Why, if I may, your comments that you made about current AI is correct. It's
okay, so let me continue. That was Wednesday, right? But I don't believe the Russians have right now enough of
technical, technological advance on hand to be able to do that. Dr. Roy.
Warren, what do you think, Roy?
I would agree with you, Wesley. I think to a degree Russians are paper tigers. I don't believe anything Putin says generally. You know, if he told me the sun was in the sky, I'd double-check him. I don't know. I think this is all just subterfuge to muddy the waters, to panic people, to get more people to say, enough giving trouble to poor Russia. Let them have Ukraine if they want it, and we'll just hide in our basements and such, and just don't kill us. So I tend to discount most of what Russian propaganda kind of speaks. I don't think they have the technology. They didn't when they were powerful and had a lot of money, and now they're a gas station with nukes. So and they use human beings as ammunition. They just keep throwing human beings into a pile to die. So I would agree with you. I don't think it's they're legitimate. I certainly think the intelligence agency should continue investigating, but I don't think that the United States should change their attitude towards Russia any bit and be frightened of them, because they've never really been worthwhile our worries there. Again, to me, they're paper tigers.
Okay. And to XGN. Russia is bound by several legal restrictions regarding the use of the presence of nuclear weapons in space, and it was Article 4 of the Outer Space Treaty from 1967 that bans nuclear weapons from being put into orbit, installed on celestial bodies, or otherwise stationed in outer space. So that's one of the parts, but Russia is not obeying anything. It is good to remind the time of Reagan when he had the plans to put nuclear weapons in space, but eventually nothing happened from that we don't know about it. Back to you.
AC2GS. So my understanding is that technologically it's not it wasn't possible back then. It's not possible even now. There are limitations to these weapons and their effectiveness. And so it sounds nice, but it's not. I think part of the multiple reasons why the Soviet Union collapsed is because they took Reagan's threat seriously, and they decided to flush a lot of their own money down the drain with their own version of Star Wars. So I don't know if Reagan meant to kind of provoke this reaction, and it was all a clever ruse, or he just didn't know how physics worked. It was getting a little foggy towards the end there in the administration. So I'm not quite sure what he was thinking at the time, but it was an absurd idea technologically. You just could not do it.
Okay. Some news about what's going on out there. Today is the day, actually, day is 25th, that was 24th. So the day of the country defenders in Russia. And in the day, the second of the airplanes, which there are only six remaining in Russia, was shot down by Ukrainians. That was actually flying a radar that coordinated all of the shooting on Ukrainian territory. So we're not talking politics, we're talking technology. But the first one was shut down 1.5 months ago, and another plane that was receiving signals from that plane, which is called 50U, if I'm not mistaken, that was coordinating airplane that was sending signals to the ground troops was shot with that too, but it was 1.5 months ago. So right now Russia has 6 remaining ones. We don't know how many of them are still flying. At the same time, they had hundreds of malfunctions in